Now, being a teacher is hard. Today, perhaps more than any other time in history, there is a teacher shortage, and there is a reason for that. We're going to talk about it. Scott Barron is next. Let's be clear. This is the Clearly Christian Podcast.
This is Clearly Christian with Dr. Cy Smith, bringing light and giving voice to our country's single greatest hope while moving the culture to God's design. Our mission, to increase the census of those who live and influence society from a biblical worldview. The time for Clearly Christian is now. Here is your host, Dr. Cy Smith.
I'm Dr. Cy Smith, and this is Clearly Christian, a podcast about what it means to see the world from God's perspective, and then the impact that this has on training the next generation to live a life consistent with the biblical worldview. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you like what you have been hearing and listening to, then I encourage you to subscribe or follow along, leave a review. That'll let others know that the show's worth listening to, and it'll certainly help advance our cause of spreading Christian education worldwide. Today, I'm going to introduce you to our guest, Scott Barron. He's the Chief Reinvention Officer, as he's called, and we'll ask him about that title at School Growth and SchoolGrowth.com, where they provide training and planning and support for courageous school leaders determined to succeed. So I love that line, and I know you're going to look forward to our conversation today. I know I am. He's a good friend, and I appreciate the work that he is doing. So first, let me set that up, and let's go to school, as I say on each episode. Today, I need you to know more about what it means to be a teacher today in our society and what it takes to effectively lead teachers in this culture today. You know, the field of education is facing a major crisis, if you didn't know this already. Where are the next generation of teachers and where are they going to come from? Well, it seems that many occupations certainly are facing a labor shortage. We know in healthcare and STEM fields and skilled labor naturally. The gap between the open positions in teachers and those going into the teaching professions is getting wider every year, and it's starting to reach alarming levels for those of us that are educational leaders. Every year, the number of retiring or resigning is far greater than those entering the actual field of education, especially at the college level. I've even heard that some colleges, small colleges, are actually shutting down their education departments due to the lack of majors going into that field. They just can't afford to sustain that major, which is certainly very, very sad and concerning. A recent article in USA Today reported that 86% of public schools very much so struggle to fill teacher vacancies this year. And this idea of hiring and retaining qualified teachers was the number one biggest challenge facing education, as reported by ASCD in 2023. So despite the fact that the research still states that teacher quality or a quality teacher is going to be the number one variable to determine student success in life and certainly in that classroom, generations Y and Z, those now filling that prime job market, are just not filling those vacancies left behind by X and the boomers. And the most cited reasons all start with the letter P. They're easy to remember. The pay, parents, pandemic, and politics. And those are the most cited reasons by some of these those young people. So I don't think any of us would be surprised by those reasons. And each of them certainly is loaded with explanations. And we don't want to get into all of that today. But I bring them up together because they illustrate the complexity of the K-12 school culture. And that's certainly going to be something we talk about with Scott Barron today. In his book entitled Love 'Em and Lead 'Em, which is a great title, by the way, Scott says a school's a fragile ecosystem of relationships that requires an unusually strong capacity for love, grace, and forgiveness. And boy, after 32 years in education, I could not concur even more strongly. Couple this with the fact, like Scott says, today's educators are tired. They're tired of the conflict. They're tired of the confusion. They're tired of the distractions and the stress. And then you throw on top of that the unrelenting pressure of the school schedule and just what's commanded or demanded of teachers on a day-to-day basis. So it's getting harder and harder to find people to sustain these roles. So again, it's relatively simple to identify the teacher shortage problem and even its root causes. But solving the crisis and stemming this tide for this issue and others like it, that's certainly the challenge ahead of us. And it's not so simple. So let's take a look at these issues today and talk with someone who's really, whose life works right now involves growing schools and the people who have the courage to lead them. So that's what we'll be talking about today. First, two quick chalkboard points that I want you to take away from our discussion that I know we're going to be bringing out. Chalkboard point number one, excellent schools understand that success, both organizationally and individually, depends on the quality and the qualities of those teachers. In the face of a national teacher shortage, educational leaders have to understand what it's going to take to effectively lead, inspire, and encourage those teachers in our classrooms today. Chalkboard point number two, K-12 schools are some of the most complex organizations in our economy. Just no doubt about it. It's built on a fragile network of relationships. Because there's so many variables that impact student outcomes and the culture there at the school, excellent schools require a team of professionals who relentlessly are devoted to that mission and profoundly trust each other. So those are our chalkboard points, and we'll come back to those throughout the episode. But now let's go ahead and bring in Scott Barron. And I would say, now you know, as I like to say every episode, so that you can not only think differently, but you can act differently, and you can say no more if you must. And so that brings us in. And so, Scott, welcome. We're really glad to have you here. Scott's an educator. He's an entrepreneur. He's an author, as I mentioned, and a leading voice advocating for and mentoring educators in their calling influence. So not only the chief reinvention officer of school growth, but also the executive director of Educators Fellowship. So that's a great, great title, and appreciate the work you do. And again, we'll talk about Love Them and Lead Them, because that's a great book as well that's designed to encourage educators. And I just can't wait to watch or walk our faculty through that. So thanks so much, Scott, for being here.
It's my pleasure, and love the platform that you've created to try to inspire greater leadership and thinking among the Christian school leaders that are out there, and hopefully the next generation as well. So just really, really appreciate what you're doing.
Wow, thanks so much. Yep. Well, I heard Scott speak at a workshop, I don't know, several months ago, and I said, this is a guy who's got to be on the podcast, because you were certainly speaking my language. And I mean, it was, I don't know how long you talked that day, but like I said, it was mic drop moment after mic drop moment after mic drop moment. I love some of those lines. So we're going to jump on into some of those things. First, though, tell us about Chief Reinvention Officer. I got to imagine that you gave some careful thought to that title. And that obviously lines up with what it is that you're doing. Where'd you get that from?
Well, you know, I went through a self-discovery process. I was kind of hit that middle-aged level, my early 40s, and I said, you know, I want to kind of figure this out. And so I began to kind of do some self-exploration, and I discovered what I love to do, what I feel like I got a real passion around and purpose in, is helping people reinvent themselves, even, you know, individuals as well as organizations. And because, you know, to me, that's one of the truths of scripture, is God's constantly saying, I don't care where you've been. Let's go. I got a plan for you. Right. I mean, that was the message for Moses at the bush, right? Was, hey, Moses, I get it. You know, I was there when all those things happened, but I got a plan for you. Right. This is a new path. And that's the privilege we have in our daily lives, is we can make different choices. We can choose what goes into our mind. We can choose where we work. We can choose how we work. We can choose to change our habits. And so the whole reinvention idea was, you're not defined by your past. You know, God's designed you for a purpose, and in your school and in your leadership and in your company or whatever that is. And so that's the joy of what I have a real passion around, is helping people find that next path, you know, to let it go, you know, to get past the past and move forward. And a lot of schools run up against that. Having been involved in school leadership for a couple of decades, I discovered that is one of the barriers to schools, is us creating a pathway for sometimes reinvention. We go through different stages where there's conflict or there's just a disruption that happens. And now we've got to, you know, now we have to say, okay, now what? Now what? What do we do now? And so that's, you know, it was my company, so I get to make up my own titles. So I chose Chief Reinvention Officer to kind of create a little bit of a spark to say, right, wait, what is that? Right. And so it sparks good conversations.
Yes, I love that because not only, and I didn't know this piece, so that's good. And not only, I just assumed, and most will too, yeah, you're reinventing your school, that makes sense. But I love the personal side to that too, that you as a leader may want to recognize that you can always reinvent yourself and start fresh, right. New mercies every morning, so to speak. So I love both the personal and the organizational piece. That probably plays well for all of us middle-agers like you said. So that's great stuff there. Two primary topics, the quality of our teachers and the culture of our schools. And so that's what I want to focus on here today. So let's start with the teachers. Love that line, the product of the school isn't the students, it's the faculty and the experiences that they create every day. That's going to be a major shift for a lot of listeners. And I think it, for me, maybe I heard it before, but I'm not sure it really sunk in until you said it again this fall. And so it was a little shift in my thinking, and I really challenged my leadership team with that as well. So maybe explain that, because I'm sure a lot of people are saying, wait, isn't it the students? How is the major, you know, how is this product to the faculty and the experience? I don't get it.
Yeah. And it's a bit heretical in some circles to say that, hey, it's not your students that we're not really here to try to create the student voice or other outcomes. We're really trying to create virtue and a veracity for curiosity and for learning and for growth. And sometimes even as educators, we get confused, right? And so the things that we know is that if you're going to create a healthy organization, well, then focus on the variables that you actually control. And I'll think about that for a second, right? You've got all these things that impact student outcomes. You have their DNA. You have their home life, their peer group, their nutrition, the experiences of trauma in their lives. Their sleep patterns, right? There's all these things. We've in our research have found at least 13, 14 different variables there that are completely outside of the school's control, have no influence in those decisions or of those factors. But what do we control? Well, there are some things we do control in school leadership. We do control the quality of our people. And we know that if we can build an incredibly gifted team of educators, and I'm using that term to be inclusive of all school employees, not just the teachers, because we know, particularly in the K-12 space, now we have the privilege of working with a wide range of educational institutions from preschool through, you know, K-12, even into higher ed, and even some corporate education strategies. And what we know is that if we can focus on those educational factors that we can literally control and you know, move the quality of, well, then we get better results and we do get to control the quality of our people. And if you really look at it from a K-12 perspective, the majority of our budget, usually on average around 80% of our budget, it is people, right? So that's where we've invested most of our money. And we also know that, so 80% of our budget is people, 80% of our marketing turns out that's people also, right? So you know that, you know, if your own faculty, your teachers, everybody, if they're raving fans, what kind of impact does that have on your culture and on your enrollment? That's your cheapest, most effective marketing strategy, is having your own people believe in what you're doing. Of course, 80% of your impact on students, we know, is also through our people. And that's lots of research on this that shows that you could put, you know, curriculum, technology and facilities, everything else in the mix, and nothing come close. Put it all together, it's not even close to the impact of the quality and qualities of our people, right? So, and then 80% of our headaches it's our people, right? So, I mean, that's where we have tensions and different expectations. And so the challenge is that really education leadership is about building an incredible team of talented, energized, engaged educators, and then learning to love them like they are.
Right.
Teachers aren't a means to an end. Our educators aren't just there as part of a function. They build relationships. They inspire. They enable students to dream bigger and to think through things at a completely different level. that there's nothing that is going to replace that opportunity and responsibility of the educator. And so often we know that's true, that the rules of 80 for school leadership, they stand up. The challenge is this, Si, is that for the people in the bill who are leading, is so often we get dominated by the tyranny of the urgent. We get drawn into the next crisis or the next, whatever that's happening. And so we call this the perplexing preponderance of the people paradox, right? Which is, we know that our people are the most valuable asset. We know that they make the biggest difference. We know that we're investing majority in them. And yet we spend, on average, a school administrator will spend less than 5% of their work week focused on building their people.
Yeah.
And that's a tension. That's an unhealthy tension. So what we're trying to do is encourage a reflection that says, hey, if you're going to lead a school, you got to understand that learning how to build relationships with and support and love educators, that's your calling. And it's hard for some who come into this administrator role to understand your role isn't towards students. It's towards adults.
Yeah.
And it's shifting into that mindset of, hey, learn how to love educators, learn how to lead educators, learn how to pour into their lives, learn how to listen to them, learn how to build a team, right? Because if you can do that, you can truly create an authentically excellent school.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's the secret sauce.
Right. Yeah, and you're so right. A lot of things to unpack there. And you and I both know, and might mention this later, and I think you mentioned it in your speech. You know, for some reason, education, we have to be one of the lowest professions in terms of providing continued formative coaching from our leaders, our teachers, our support staff. We just don't do it.
Yeah.
And we talked about this even recently at our school. You know, why doesn't this happen more? It just does not happen well in education. It sounds good. We intend to do it, but you're right. Tyranny of the urgent. There's so many other things. I mean, you could have coaching planned on your agenda all day as a leader, and I bet you might get to that a fraction of the time, if at all, because of all the other things that are going to walk through your office door that day.
For sure.
Do you think that this whole idea of being, you know, teacher-centered versus student-centered, do you think maybe when you step back and look at the big picture, this has contributed then to perhaps, you know, teacher retention and teacher shortage issues that maybe, educators know going in, hey, this is a tough field. And maybe I'm not going to get the support I need, or I don't want to be held accountable for all those outcomes that I can't. You know, people know that there's high stakes testing, and people know that there's, you know, this is a tough, you know, you might get shut down due to a pandemic and you have to go online and I might have to teach kids over Zoom. And if they don't do well, I might be held accountable for that. And those variables, like you said, that are outside of my control. Do you think maybe that, you know, because of what we have lacked a focus on teachers and we haven't encouraged them well, that this might contribute to retention? I'm just guessing. What do you think?
I mean, listen, there is such, in the United States particularly, there is such a disrespect and disregard for the profession of education. At some level, it's actually embarrassing. Mm-hmm. That we've allowed the level of disruptive, disrespectful behavior that happens towards teachers, both in person as well as on social media and other places. And there has to be some point where you draw the line and say, hey, wait a minute. These are professionals. These are people who have to deal with a lot of complex issues. They're not just teaching a curriculum. They're also having to raise children. They're having to teach and discipline. And in many situations, in many of our government schools, public schools, they're having to feed them and do a lot of social emotional development, other things that, I think it's an extraordinary responsibility. And holding these educators accountable for these outcomes for students is just irresponsible. It's dysfunctional and irresponsible. Because again, they don't have control over those variables, and they're expected to do this in often environments that are full of tension and dysfunctions. That's the best way I can say it. So if in our dialogue with educators who have left the profession, you've referenced that a couple of times, where we have had a massive exodus of people leaving the profession, and we have a very low level of enrollment in schools of education now. I'm on the board for the Johns Hopkins School of Education, and we're seeing across the board in schools of education, of small schools, big schools, whatever, that there is a decline in enrollment. Right. Why? Well, it does have to do with the overall unemployment rate. I mean, certainly there are other options, and right. For a lot of people who may have the gift to teach, and of course we know there actually is a gift to teach, and the diploma doesn't give the gift, right? It's something that's a God thing. But where they do have that, often they're discouraged to go into this field because of the dysfunctional behaviors that are so dominant in schools. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of reasons for that. There's no demon that we could point to say, well, that's the cause. There it's a multitude of factors. But the truth is that for the most part, in our conversations with those who have left the profession, it has been directly about the poor level of accountability, of clear expectations, and of culture within these schools. They just reached a point where they couldn't take it anymore. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. These are people who, I think many of them do have the gift, but they would rather be an airline stewardess, or they'd rather be, you know, working anywhere else and have to deal with all the conflict, the internal conflict, even among colleagues.
Yeah.
Even among peer-to-peer colleagues, where we have such a conflict in our culture, where we can't resolve, you know, simple sort of discussions and build trust. And that's one of the things I think that would love to just convey as a part of this conversation, Si, is, you know, if you're going to lead a school, your job is to nurture and cultivate this ecosystem of trust. And you mentioned earlier in the intro that, you know, it is a fragile ecosystem. And in some schools, it's so fragile because there's such unpredictable behavior. And if you're going to learn to love people, and particularly educators, well, you've got to be consistent. And this is directly back to, you go back to read, you know, probably the best definitions of love is 1 Corinthians 13, right? I mean, it's used, Paul's writing is used at weddings and other events. And it's really a powerful definition. And there's a verse 7 in there. He says, love always, right? Mm. Love always hopes, love always trusts, love always protects, love always perseveres. And I think that's a powerful goal for education leadership. Whatever level, if you're a principal, head of school, president, whatever your role is to learn how to create an environment for educators to thrive. Because if you build that team of educators, if you truly build that team of educators who they get the mission and they're willing to align with your core values and they want to be a part of your team. If you could build that type of a team together, they will change kids' lives. Right. This isn't just about doing what's in the best interest of educators. That's not what this is about at all. I mean, certainly we're trying to build a team that is responsible, a team that has a passion for teaching and for adapting their instructional strategies and their culture and building relationships with students and with parents. And right. That's what great educators do.
Right. Right.
And so part of this is, hey, we have to take responsibility as school leaders to build the right team and then create the conditions for educators to thrive. Yeah. And that is not the case in way too many schools. And if you really have a passion, if you think you're called to lead a school, then learn how to love educators.
Yeah.
Because educators are weird.
Yeah, great
right.
Point.
I mean, educators are different. They're different. And I mean that in a positive way. They're different. And so you have to learn what makes them tick. You have to learn how to understand their heads and their hearts and strengthen them. And you have to be love always, right? And that's a high calling.
Yeah, great point. We've got to be the only profession where you can say, and everybody understands it, when you look at the most common reason cited, pay, parents, politics and pandemic. I mean, there's not a lot of other professions out there that, yep, those are the four that just jump right off the page, right? I mean, these probably don't surprise you at all. And you're exactly right. Educators are looking at those things and going, yeah, those are big, big issues. Yeah, it might be a little bit more or less challenging to be an airline stewardess, or do something else where those are not my four big hitters. You know, people, you're always going to have interpersonal relations, and every job has those things and things like that. But yeah, these are significant. And I would concur. And I had mentioned that as well in my opening, this idea of schools have to have this unusually strong capacity for love and grace and forgiveness. And you said it well, that this idea of unpredictable behavior. And that's kind of what I was referring to also, that there is nothing predictable about the education industry when your entire life's work is based on what happens with kids ages, 4 to 18. I think I saw a comic one time that said something like, I don't know what I'm doing, basing my entire, my whole being is based in the hands of adolescents, who are struggling and going through this emotional thing, and I have put my career in their hands. And so there's nothing predictable about that. It's very volatile. That is so, so true, because no two schools are alike, no two kids are alike, no two families are alike. I mean, there's just so many dynamics.
Exactly.
Well, is this dynamic then why, as you say, we have a lot of good schools in this country, but not a lot of great schools? Because moving from good to great.
That's a line to use,
to use Collins, a language, but moving there is tough. And like you said, you have to be intentional. Yeah. Do you think that's why we're stuck in the good category and not the great category?
Well, and there's also not a uniform definition of what is great. Right. I mean, that's the thing, that it's really specific to the context of each school. I mean, your school is a great place, but what you're doing in your school is different than what another school in your market, very same city and maybe even overlapping community. Your story is different. Your context is different. So part of it is being able to adjust to those realities, but then learning how to create the narrative for us, how do we clearly understand, our story, our core strengths, and then we're gonna have to be able to be much more intentional about the whole, recruiting and talent development. We have to learn how to build a team. And that's not a strength of a lot of administrators, knowing how to recruit, knowing how to cultivate. And you mentioned earlier about coaching. It's really odd that of all the professions that I have had a chance to know, we're the only one that I've run up against where coaching is actually perceived as a negative. I mean, think about that, right? If you think about a corporate CEO, they'll have a Fortune 500 CEO guarantee has at least two or three coaches pouring into their lives. They're helping them with sometimes their executive presence, or they're helping them with their financial management or just their career path, right? Whatever. Because they want to shorten the learning curve. Every professional athlete has multiple coaches. But if you as an educator, Cy, if I had to say, hey, Cy, I'm going to put you on a coaching plan, what does that mean to you as an educator, right? Well, that means that I'm having to fix you, right? It's remedial. It's right. So I'm putting you on notice. And I think it's sad that we've allowed coaching to take on such a negative tone in our profession. I believe that every single educator should have a coaching plan, a growth plan. Perhaps even an IEP, right? Maybe everybody gets an IEP, right? So that there is an individualized education plan for every educator. You should have one. I should have one, right? So, and I do. I have a plan that I work on, and I renew that every quarter, and I share that plan with my team. Then they know what I'm learning. They know what I'm working on. And I'm working on things around trust. How do you build trust? How do you lose trust? How do you build culture? Or how do you build a culture that has deep levels of trust? And so, because, trust is one of those things that you gain in months and years, and you lose in nanoseconds. right? And so, you know, how do you do that? So that's a commitment that we have to have in how we create an environment and a culture that both educators and, of course, the target market we're trying to serve can thrive. Mm-hmm. And I use that term intentionally. That's sort of a Gallup way of describing. I'm not just trying to help you, you know, survive. Instead, I'm trying to help you thrive, you know, and really grow up and to be all that, that you were created to be. And that's kind of where we've developed our own sort of unique value proposition for educators is one is we just want to say, hey, thank you for making the commitment to this work. It's hard work. Mm. Being an educator is hard work. So we just want to, right. We just want to pour into your life. That's why we share the Monday encouragement that we do every Monday morning. And that's why we had published the book was just say, come on, we can do this. Don't give up. Don't give up. Right. Right? And right. Then the other side of that is, yeah, it's hard. I mean, we're going to have to navigate conflict. And that's one of the things I think that every educator, if you're going to be successful in this field, you have to learn how to navigate conflict. Mm-hmm. It's an inevitable part of the job, especially as you move up in higher levels of leadership. And I think that's one of the reasons why people leave the profession is because they are not equipped or the people around them are ill-equipped to know how to deal with differences of opinion or dealing with behavioral, you know, conflict, right? And because conflict is a part of life. It's just, it is. And when you're dealing in a school setting where it's so emotionally charged, it gets more flagrant, right?
Yeah.
And so a couple of rules about conflict is we know that conflict avoided is not conflict healed, right? That just becomes more of an embedded cancer in the culture. And when you allow that to fester, when you allow that to linger in your culture, you're going to have problems. It's going to create those silos that dominate so many schools and then the alliances that come up and then the trust just keeps notching down and notching down. And then little things, you know, cause all these dysfunctional eruptions and it's arguments and it's battles and, you know, and some people deal with it differently. Some people are more aggressive and some people are more passive aggressive, right? You can still get that. We'll bless your heart. Right? We'll get that sometimes in the South, right? He's like, hey, come on now. We gotta, let's deal with this, right? Cause the beautiful thing is that wisdom is revealed in conflict.
Yeah.
Right. If you go back and look at scripture, wisdom was always revealed in conflict. And that's one of the things, if you're going to leave a school, you have to step into that moment. You have to understand that whether it's conflict with parents or with your colleagues or whatever, our ministry is to shepherd adults. It's to shepherd adults through the process of learning how to resolve conflict, how to give grace, the hard thing is that if you're going to be an educator, particularly if you're going to put in a faith context, then you better learn how to master grace. And because ungrace is the demon that causes the most damaging illnesses and cancer in school cultures.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, where people hang on to things. They can't let it go. They can't move on.
Right. Yeah. Good points. And you're exactly right about, I'll back up and mention it again, the coaching. 32 years I've been doing this. Every time we try to go down the coaching path with anybody, it's the end of the world. I mean, it's, and you're exactly right. In other businesses, they say, okay, we brought you in. Now let's coach you up and make you better. In education, if you're 22, 23 years old, you're assumed to know exactly what you're doing if you have those education credentials, which is crazy because I mean, I've been there myself and I know what those education programs look like. You have to do two things. You have to learn the art of teaching and the pedagogy behind all of that, the management strategies and how to do one-on-one, how to do small groups, how to do 1 to 32. I mean, yes, there's a craft there. Right. But then you also have to know your content, especially for secondary teachers. Well, elementary teachers too, but especially secondary teachers. If you're hired to teach, you know, junior, senior history and government, well, then you better really know history and government well. And, you know, you don't have to be, you know, all things, but you definitely better know your content pretty well. So two angles and you have 4 years to get that done. Then you have to take all those required courses that every college wants you to take. So You cram all that into 4 years, and then you're not going to get any more coaching. And you better be good because, you should have it figured out because you have an education degree from XYZ.
That's right. And so now you're paid to be the smartest person in the room, right?
Yes.
Now you're paid. You're supposed to be not have any vulnerability, and it doesn't work.
Right, which is not necessarily the case. That's exactly right, because I love those ideas that relentlessly motivated or devoted, or I should say, to the mission, profoundly trust each other. I mean, just you could do a whole show on trust and this idea of providing grace and trust and it's a challenge. And I think we struggle sometimes in education because parents are, they're in our faces all the time giving you feedback. Kids are giving you feedback all the time. Obviously, even peers are giving you feedback all the time. So, you're dealing with your impressions and all those voices and things like that. And so you're constantly praying for wisdom. Am I really seeing here what's an accurate picture? And I don't have time to go watch that teacher teach all the time. I can't spend, 5 days a week in their classroom. And they might be good, or maybe these criticisms are a little off. Or maybe they just need coached, or maybe we need to move on, and maybe education's not the field for you. Sometimes that happens, unfortunately, because it's not one of those fields that, you can either do surgery or you can't, or something like that, or you're going to fumble that legal case the minute you walk in the courtroom, right? Or, whatever that is. It's more like, hey, let's give you a shot and let's see how it goes. And how long of a shot do I give you, or how much coaching do I give you before we decide? You can be coached up. No, this is probably not the profession for you. And so that can be a challenge. But boy, a lot of love, grace, forgiveness, those are good things. Yeah, real quick, last question, because I thought it was interesting. Yeah. What do you think the future of education looks like? Can you tell me that in 1 minute? Because I thought that was good that you've given some thought of those things.
Well, I mean, we just did a program last week at Schools United down in Fort Lauderdale, and the structure of it was, hey, we're about to enter the second quarter of the 21st century. 2025, next year, is when we start the next quarter of this century. The first quarter of this century had a lot of adventures for school leadership. We saw some expansion of school choice in different places, like in Ohio. We learned a lot about we've been through a recession. We went through the pandemic. But we learned a lot. This next quarter, buckle up. Because there is the things that are about to happen in this next quarter, almost every variable that you have is going to be in play, from technology to curriculum to regulation to talent to facility. Everything's going to be in play, and it's going to the level of competition is going to rise. The access to highly developed curriculum. You're going to see kind of like Herb Kelleher started Southwest Airlines with the idea of to democratize the skies, right? To give access for everybody to be able to fly, not just the person, the business guy, or the person with a lot of money. Well, what's happening to the curriculum is really a democratization, giving access to high quality curriculum and instruction is going to happen through virtual reality and AI and other tools. Some of it will be very corrupt. Some of it will be damaging, and some of it will be enlightened and have a core truth to it. So we have to have a higher level of discernment, and we have to have a much higher level of innovation in our schools. And that's something that that level of change is going to be a very stressful thing for a lot of educators, because by default, educators tend to want to not change. We want to kind of hang on to the lesson plans we did 20 years ago. And we want to not, we don't even want to change classrooms and whatever else. So we're not going to have a choice. I mean, the pressure to figure this out is going to be enormous because of competitive pressures and even because of just mission opportunities. However you see it, whether you have to or you get to. It's not a lot of that's just attitude, right?
Yeah.
But there will be massive changes happening, and the schools that will thrive through that are the ones who have a very highly developed culture where they have a trust and they can innovate and sustain their culture. By far and away, those schools will dominate over the next 25 years.
Yeah, I love that. We're going to have to think a little bit more like a business. You're exactly right. You're going to have to be nimble. And like you said, buckle up. This idea that, boy, if you were not used to coaching and working on the fly because you thought education was plug and chug from back when you were 20-something and you can just do, those days sure. are over. And I think this is going to be something yeah. that educational leaders, we're going to have to adopt this new paradigm that, you know,
and I want to push back on even thinking like a business. I think we are running a business. That's the truth. Yes. But it's thinking responsibly. It's thinking yes. as wise stewards. And that means that just because we have good intentions, we don't get a pass on economic realities. That's right. That's the truth. And so it is thinking responsibly. It is thinking, and if there are a lot of businesses that go out of business as well, right? The failure rate of small business is very high. But it is not just thinking like a bit. It's thinking responsibly. It's leadership that understands that you can't just self-describe yourself as excellent and you're excellent. You don't get to proclaim yeah. that.
That's right.
You know, excellence is, you know, who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. Yes.
Your customers right? will and determine so that.
The authenticity yep. is critical here.
Yeah. Great. Great point. Well, if they want to know more about you, they want to know how do they get Love Them and Lead Them, or sure. they want to know more about school growth, or perhaps there's a leader out there or a parent even out there or a teacher out there that's mm-hmm. listening and says, boy, I'd love to find out a little bit more about Scott and his work. What do sure. they do?
Well, so one is we do a free email every Monday morning that just tries to encourage you. So no matter what your role is in education, whether you're in the classroom, in the office, in the athletic field, whatever you're on the boardroom, at all levels, we just want to encourage you and thank you for your commitment to the work. Two is so you can sign up for that at schoolgrowth.com or at educatorsfellowship.org or edfellowship.org. And we'd love to have you just receive that. It's not marketing. We don't even put a logo on it. It's just strictly just an encouragement. And the podcast is tied to that as well. Educators Among Us, to try mm-hmm. to again, give those a little perspective and encouragement for your day and for your week. So to challenge you with a coaching question as well. That's tied into that. So that's nice. The first thing. And then for some schools, we do a lot of executive coaching and strategic planning and enrollment strategy. And then sometimes implementation support, as they're trying to grow, and they're trying to grow in a way that's very authentic and sustainable. And so we have a whole methodology that utilizes, you know, good to great and great by choice and lots of different methodologies kind of combined together. Because our job, well, our mission really is to make life easier for those who have the courage to lead schools, right?
All right.
And that's to help them grow. But what we're trying to do is just to ease that burden a little bit, walk that journey, be the best friend with those who are in the mix. They're making it happen, and they have the courage to be in that moment, you know, like you, Si. So anyway, that's what we do, working with boards, a lot of leadership retreats and other things. So
you can
find out more there on schoolgrowth.com and be glad to share more of that story with you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you again for what you do. I know, obviously, as a longtime Christian school educator, I so appreciate it, and I needed to hear that encouragement from you as well, because no matter how long you've been in this particular line of work, you still need to be encouraged day in and day out, and you still have Absolutely. To have courage that goes right along with what it is we do in education, because it is complex, to say the least. So thank you again for joining me, Scott, and thank you for joining me today Clearly Christian podcast. And I trust that now you know more about what it means to be a teacher and what it means to effectively lead educators in this particular culture and even moving forward, because we do face a serious issue in our country when it comes to finding and keeping good quality teachers. So again, if you'd like to follow along and subscribe, we certainly would appreciate that, and leave a review. Help us spread the word. That'll certainly continue to advance our cause here at clearlychristianeducation.com, and obviously, more importantly, the cause of Christ and certainly Christian education worldwide. So thank you, and appreciate you doing this. Remember, as I always say, the only way we're going to turn things around in this country is by simply increasing the number of people who live and operate with a biblical worldview. And the single greatest way that we have to achieve that is by giving this next generation a Christian education at Christian schools or in their homes and churches. So again, that's certainly the key. So thank you again for joining us today on behalf of Scott Barron and School Growth and all of us at Clearly Christian. Again, we just appreciate you being a part of our podcast today. I'm Dr. Cy Smith. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to the Clearly Christian Podcast with Dr. Cy Smith. Hear more episodes at clearlychristianeducation.com. If you'd like more information about Christian education in your neighborhood, or if you're interested in education opportunities at Mansfield Christian School, or if you agree with Dr. Smith and want to help him in his mission to influence and awaken Christian America, you can send Dr. Smith an email through the clearlychristianeducation.com website. Message him on the Clearly Christian LinkedIn or Facebook page, or call the Clearly Christian Connect line at 419-756-5651. This has been the Clearly Christian Podcast with Dr. Cy Smith on clearlychristianeducation.com, brought to you in conjunction with Mansfield Christian School, a Bryan Media production.